Welcome back, everyone, to Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. And joining me now, all the way from the UK, is Jerry Hull. He is originally from Memphis, Tennessee. The man has produced 49 singles, 11 videos, 7 albums, and he is not done yet. Jerry, man, welcome to the show. It is great having you here.
Hey there. How you doing, Max? Big hello to you all the way from the UK, all the way over to Boston, I believe, is where you are.
That's right, man. That's right, man. Boston area, man.
A Bostonian hello to you and baked beans all the way.
All right, man. Right back at you, dude. So I'm curious, first off, what exactly brought you out to the UK? I mean, Memphis to the UK is quite like the cultural shift, shall we say.
Yeah, and usually you're probably thinking, well, it's the other way around, isn't it? I mean, it's I usually get that flack a lot. You know, it's usually the other way around because people make a mecca over to Memphis, whereas this situation was the opposite of it. So, and actually, that's a good question because it's part of my backstory, and it has a direct result of very positive attitudes towards producing music. So this thing that happened to me was I met a very young lady from Doncaster in England some while back. I think it's been about actually tomorrow is the 28th, I believe. Yeah, May the 28th. And it marks my 17th anniversary for being here in England since I splashed down from my Mercury capsule, or however way you want to put it, like an astronaut. And, you know, this backstory is kind of like a fairy tale that came true because, you know, I've always wanted to come to England, and I've always had an infatuation for, well, the rock and roll here, for one thing, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. I've been quite an Anglophile, you know, all my life. So even as a kid looking at books and encyclopedias of England and so forth, always being fascinated by it. And who would have known that somebody like that would have met a young lady in Memphis, Tennessee at a glass show. Actually, it was a products convention show. And she worked with the glass company here in England. And then she was, you know, representing her product. I was representing my company I was working for at the time, which is an architectural firm. And, you know, one thing led to another. And before you know it, I'm making plans to move over here. So it all worked out for the better. And I decided that I would make a life for myself over here. And as I say, this has had a very positive, direct result because after gigging on the run ever since, what was it, 1975, I think, or 1976, I can't remember which one. 1975, yeah, 1975 all the way up to, I think, 1999. 24 years of gigging on the road, all the way across the Midwest, all the way over to L.A., up to Toronto, across Route 66. You know, and then I find myself splashing down over in Mario, England, 17 years ago. And all this bottled up information and experiences and all this road life and shows at different places, anywhere from hole in the wall in the grounds to these posh, lavish, nice hotels and little venues and so forth, and places you'd never even know, you know, tree houses and everything else you can think of. And in between, you know, it's had a very positive impact because all this information that has been stored up has spewed forth in the last, I would say, probably 49 months. Well, actually, it is 49 months. I have spewed forth 7 albums, as you just mentioned in your intro. And in this time, 49 months ago, I decided, you know what? It's time to get serious, slow down, smell the roses. And that's what this young lady helped me do to hey, you know, slow down and look at life in a different way, you know, in a positive way. But who would have ever knew that it would have turned on the creativity knob and I would have just went, wow, and just started producing all these songs in the tune of about 350 songs in a collection that I have now. And out of that, it's about 118 tracks has been released to public in the form of 7 albums, which I have an 8th album I'm working on right now. And out of those 7 albums, I've released 49 singles. And I have a 50th single that's going to release in about a week and a half, which is the title track to my newest and latest album called When You Were Famous. And it's very interesting, and we can go into that whenever you want to.
You talk about the rock and roll culture of England, and of course England has an amazing music scene. I'm curious, was it a one band in a particular that kind of like drew you there? Because I know most folks
absolutely
the Beatles and whatnot.
Absolutely, it was Max. Well, for one thing, I don't know of anybody that could not say that the Beatles had some inadvertent effect on their music or their life or anything about any part of their culture whatsoever. And not be lying about it if they said they didn't. You know, it's just because it's just that much of an impact on the world, as everybody knows. If you don't know that, then you must be living on Mars. But anyway, you'd be surprised. But that's really not the main influence on my music, although it is definitely way up there on the top. But the top one just so happens to be a young gentleman that came from London by the name of Reginald Dwight, that later called himself Elton John. And then his partner, of course, Bernie Taupin, which are the two geniuses of all those stream of hits that everybody knows. That's their standards. If you don't know them, then wow, what happened? you missed something. But yeah, that is the biggest influence on my music is Elton John and his music. And then, of course, there is ELO and plenty of others. There's Todd Rundgren back in the United States and his impact on my music with that that style that he came out with that's very similar to some other styles. That had an impact on my piano. And then, of course, the Bacharach classic sound that back in the 70s and late 60s where I got started, you know, back in Memphis, you know, growing up with a very musically inclined family, seven kids in the family, five of them are sisters, four of them, two sets of twins, which actually turned out to be a quartet that before I even started getting into music stuff as a little kid, I would hear them singing, and my dad would play the guitar. He was a very accomplished, suave guitarist that was very sure of himself. And he had a right to be because he was a Les Paul type. He was really, really excellent guitar player. And, you know, I grew up listening to this and participating in this inadvertently, whether I wanted to or not. So music was always part of my life. And so this had a direct impact on what I would do in the future, and I followed in their footsteps. And around that time, you know, Elton John came out with, and he was brand new to the United States. Nobody had ever heard of him, if you could ever imagine that. And, you know, back in those days, they had the term superstar, which was a coin term that came from the 70s that you don't hear anymore. And, you know, that had a very big impact on a very young, influential, impressionable 13-year-old Jerry Hall, so much to the point that I went, wow, you know, Benny and the Jets and you know, Rocket Man and everything. Man, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to learn how to play the piano. I want to play it just like that, if I can, and I want to be a rock and roller just like that. I want to write music like that, and I knew immediately that's what I wanted to do. And so my father, that very year, I made a deal with him, and you know, ask him if he would get a piano, and I started taking lessons that year, and that's where it all started, right there. And I started playing, you know, Beatles songs and so forth, and occasionally, you know, I would do some church songs with my sisters. You know, we would accompany each other, you know, we would sing together, and we would do some old 60s songs together, you know, and so, you know, music and vintage music and anything that you can think of and in between has always been a part of my life, has always been, I mean, gosh, it's part of my blood.
It sounds it, man. Now, I want to hear about what a guy from Memphis, how he fits in London, because that seems like a very weird interaction. What was your early days like in London, just kind of like fitting in? And I imagine, dude, the accent war must have been strong then.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question as well, because it became a very huge, and still is, not as big as it used to be, because I'm very settled in now, and pretty much everybody treats me as a local now. And, you know, whereas when I first came here, they used to ask me quite a lot, are you on holiday? You know, are you, how long are you on holiday for, and where are you from? Now they ask me, so where do you live? You know, So they know they can. I mean, isn't it funny how even people that you're not, you know, originally part of can now detect and feel, you know, sense, hey, this guy is from England, you know. I mean, he's from England now. He's not, you know, I mean, you can tell he's from his accent. He's not from England, but, you know, he's settled in now, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a big difference from what it used to be. And London, wow. You know what? I love London in a lot of ways, but I don't like it in a lot of ways because it's too damn crowded. Mm. And, you know, the thing that sold me about England was the beautiful Dingleydale countryside that's so idyllic, like a candy box. And I know we're talking, you know, fairy tales and little, you know, fairies dancing around. And you know what? It's pretty close to that, to be honest with you. And I know to Americans, it seems to be that way. And it was to me before I came to England and visited. But I come to find out that that's exactly what it is and more. And so by my young lady partner here from England and from Doncaster has taught me quite a lot about the countryside. She's taught me how to relax and slow down and appreciate things in life because you see, Max, I'm from the big city. You see, Memphis, hustle and bustle, smoking, get out of my way. I gotta get to work, you know, and that wears and tears on your life for many, many years. And so, you know, when you finally have the opportunity to, you know, finally have a time in your life where you can go, isn't that something now what I can do, instead of, you know, hustle and bustle, and you can slow down and actually, you know, learn what is that flower over there? What is that? And I know it sounds silly, and if you were to tell me this, you know, 20 years ago, I would have thought, what the hell are you talking about, man? But now it makes sense. And now, what it has done, it has opened my eyes to a lot of different things, to love, to art, to music, to experiences that I never thought I had bottled up inside of me, even to mystical experiences that I never thought existed. There was a train, actually there's a small village not too far from here that we love to frequent very often, called Kipling Coates. It's a very small village. I live in a small community of about 360,000 people. That's about, I'd say, probably a quarter of the size of Memphis, and it's still pretty big. But it's called Kingston upon Hull, and it's about 200 miles north of London. And this is where we live now. And, you know, it's in the countryside of Yorkshire. So I've got the city 10 minutes away from me, from my front doorstep. And I have the garden and the countryside 10 minutes away from me from my back doorstep. So I'm in a situation where everything is really idyllic for me. And coincidentally, that has had a very big effect on, like I say, the way I write. And, they are still coming, and hey, I'm not complaining because I love to create music, and you know, there's plenty of stories to be had. I consider myself a storyteller, and all my songs have stories behind them, and I just believe that you really don't have a song unless you have a story behind it. And there's plenty of stories to tell from the experiences of my life and the new experiences that I've had here.
I want to hear about the music scene there, because now, I know you mentioned that you're about 200 miles north of London, but when you are in the area, what are some of the venues that you like to check out?
Okay, now, the thing is here is that, as you might have guessed, the music scene is very, very hot here. There's always something going on. As I mentioned earlier, I spent some time up in Toronto and did some gigging up there in the latter part of the 80s and 90s, you know, on and off before I went back down to Memphis. And then came over here. But, you know, Canada and Toronto is very similar in the sense of England. I don't know if you know this, but very similar in the sense that they're very Englishized, you know, if there's such a word. And I mean, they're very similar in being British. You know, the architecture is very similar. The ways of their life is very similar. They have a pub life. They have a little village life and things like that. And I just love it to bits because it's so quaint, very calm, very peaceful, and very thought-provoking, you know, and very clean. You know, it's everything is so spick and span. Yeah, English life is very similar to the Canadian life, and that's kind of what dawned on me about this place. And while I was in Toronto, it immediately hit me that, wow, they have got things going on every freaking day. There's always something going on in the way of music. There's always something going on in the way of venues, as opposed to what I was used to back in Memphis. Yeah, they always had things going on down in Beale Street, but you had to go down in the city. It wasn't just everywhere around the city in different places like it is when you go to Toronto. It's everywhere. And the same thing with England. You go to England and all the different villages and all the little different cities, all different sizes. You've got all these different places where community comes together, and community plays a big role in life here in England. It's been one big cultural anthropology, sociological experience for me here in England, and it still continues to be. The novelty is kind of disappointingly wore off just a bit because I've become used to it, and, you know, that's just the way it is. It can't always be, oh, wow, listen to that accent, isn't that cool? You know, I mean, that's the way it was when I first come here. But it's not that way anymore because I'm so used to it now. But occasionally I'll come across a phrase and say, I haven't heard that one yet. That's a new one, you know? And so, yeah, you're constantly learning. Yeah, you know, there's always these very exciting venues going on. Back to your original question, you know, there's always an open mic everywhere you go. There's no shortage of places to go and play your music. They're very welcoming, very friendly people, and I love them, and they seem to love me. So it works out very well.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you used to gig all the time. You have been all over the place.
Yeah, for 24 years.
Yeah. Do you have any really crazy road stories? Because I hear all kinds of... Okay, man, hit me with it. What you got?
Well, there was this time, and, you know, I like to think that I can be able to laugh at myself if I want to. You know, you don't have to be so serious with yourself that you have to be rigid, you know, and think that everything has to be perfect. You know, we're all human, right? We're not, you know, we're not robots like machines. So there was this situation one time where it was quite embarrassing for me because I was playing a little venue. I think it was like, where was it? In Oklahoma somewhere. And it was just outside of it. It was just before you hit back out into Texas, you know, where it crosses the panhandle there, as I recall. And I think that's where it was. Anyway, you know, I was really just getting into it. I was playing this upright a little keyboard that was sitting on a stand. It was like a Yamaha, you know. And, you know, there were some roses and stuff up there that was thrown up there, and I grabbed them and put them on top of the piano. You know, I felt like a rock star. And all it was just a gig, and we were having fun, and we were getting paid, like, you know, 25, 35 bucks a piece. You know, it was barely enough to pay for gasoline to go to the next one and maybe get a hamburger, you know. I mean, it's just the way it was. Especially going back up the Route 88, you know, you get to a point where, you know, it's like a starving artist, you know, you know, it's just the way it is. I mean, I've heard some really, really bad stories about, some bands, you know, the ones that have really made it big, like that grunge band, Nirvana or another band that I read an interview about how they were starving artists, you know, one time living in dilapidated flats, eating bologna off the floor. And I thought, God, that's terrible. Just so they could get their break. And, you know, I kind of felt that way at times, you know, although it didn't get quite that bad. Okay. But, yeah, you know, there's that particular instance that night. I was really jamming out. We were really getting into the music. And I was hitting the keyboard so hard that it tumped it over. Tumped the keyboard over. Yeah.
Oh, no.
And it made a big racket. Everybody was screaming and hollering. The band kept playing. I picked and I kind of just got down on my knees and started playing the piano on my knees while the piano was laying on the floor. And everybody just started cheering and cheering and cheering, you know, because it was just, it kind of wound up being kind of a Jerry Lee Lewis thing instead of a Jerry Hall thing.
Oh, hey,
but
that's not so bad.
But, you know, it's not so bad. It still turned out okay. But, you know, it's just, you know, I can really sit here and go on and on about some crazy adventures, you know, especially during the 70s, you know, so, I don't think I might. I don't think I'll go there because it's lewd and crude.
Fair enough, man. Fair enough. Now, yeah. Do you still gig out as much these days, or are you more focused on the songwriting?
Oh no, you know, I've calmed down quite a lot as far as gigging goes, and I had the 24 years of it, as I mentioned, and so, you know, since I had so much of that, and then I had time to kind of slow down and slow the spokes down a little bit. And this new experience that I have now in England with my lady friend here and you know, from Doncaster, now I'm concentrating on these albums. I'm concentrating on putting out music. I'm not getting any younger. You know, I want to put out as much of my mark as I can post-haste. You know, because I've already done the previous stuff, you know, in my younger, you know, oat sowing day, so to speak. And so that part of me has been done. And, you know, back in those days, you're young and you're really not thinking about anything. It's about having fun. You know, and you want to go out there and you want to do your best and all that. And yeah, entertaining is on your mind and you know, you want to produce music, but you're not quite as, serious about producing music and writing music, you know, in those days as I am now. So I guess it took all those years for me to finally go, okay, it's time to get serious now and, you know, start writing some songs. And like I say, it was just like a bottled up bunch of information just exploded. And they're still coming. And, you know, it's almost as if there's some kind of song God that bestows me these songs, and I'm so grateful that he or she bestows them to me. And I don't, you know, I don't argue with it. I say thank you very much. I take them on the run and do the best I can with them.
Speaking of which, let's talk about the new album. When You're yeah. Famous, your seventh one now. Now, this was released back in January. What has been the response to this one being out?
I think that it's had a very, very positive response, especially the first single that was released back in January called, God, what is that, dude? Matchbox Cover! Matchbox Cover. And that particular, you know, that particular song has been so positive, such a big impact. It's just very catchy. Matchbox Cover has had, within the last month or two, let's see, it's on its fifth week at number one right now with a radio station out of Dallas-Fort Worth. 5 weeks in a row at number one, top 10.
Not bad, dude, not bad.
And I'm thinking, man, what the hell's going on this song? It must be a recipe for success, this particular song. But, you know, I'm not about that. I just don't do that. I can, if you were to hold a gun to my head and say, you must crank out a certain recipe, I'm just not going to do that because yeah. I'm just not going to have to do that. I like to keep innovating. I like to keep doing different stuff. But yeah, Matchbox Cover from When You Were Famous, my latest album, has done very, very well. It's been very well received. All the songs that have been releasing from the album has been well received. I can't fault it so far. And people seem to, you know, love it, especially, you know, the ones that believe in me and support me on the songs that I've been releasing. So I must be doing something right. And the ones that I'm choosing to release must be the ones that I need to be releasing.
I got you, yeah. I really dug Claire.
Isn't that weird that you mentioned Claire, yeah. And it was on my mind just before you said that I was going to say something.
Weird, man. now I wanted to also talk about your own like musical styles because you kind of like run about a bit. You know, you're a bit of jazz, you're a bit of rock and roll. Have you always been like that, or is it kind of like changed over the years as you kind of absorb the stuff in Memphis and then like later on in England?
From that early age, when I was listening to, you know, Goodbye Olympic Road albums that are produced by artists that do it that way, you know, and the Beatles that do it that way, that produce songs that are, and Jethro Tull and, you know, all of those contemporaries of that time period produce songs that are unpredictable around each and every corner. Which is exactly the way I like to be, because I come from that school of thought, and so it makes sense that I would do the same thing. And because my influences, especially Elton John, as I mentioned before, especially with the album Goodbye Yellow Brick Road and all those different sounds that you hear in the album, there's not one song on there that's the same. And each one has a different genre, even though there's a similarity of genre in each song that seems to come from the same cut of material. They all have a very unique character and taste. And that's exactly the way I like to approach my music. I don't see any other way to do it. I wouldn't want to do it any other way. And as far as I'm concerned, all my life, I've always had this attitude of, hey, there's no other way. That's the way you do it. Any other way, I don't know why you would want to do that. You know, why would you want to do the same thing? You know, it just don't make any sense. And, you know, there's plenty of people who do it, and more power to them. There's plenty of, you know, indie artists that do it today, more power to them. There's plenty of successful, you know, everybody knows this, you know, artists that do that. And more power to them, because that's what they do. That's what they do well. I mean, I know of a band right now that I really, really love that really doesn't, you know, do different genres, that sticks to one brand of music, but yet there's kind of a uniqueness of personality in each one, although, you know, although it's still the same personality of music, and there's no change of genre. And that would be Cheap Trick, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's one in particular, you know, and then there's several other bands that do things like that, but that's just one example, you see. But for me, man, there is no way, there's no way in hell that I could do that. If you would say, hey, why don't you do an album, you know, of all Americana, you know, or won't you do an album of all, you know, pop love songs, or won't you do an album of all, you know, boogie woogie rock songs, I'd say, why? You know, why would you want to do that? You know, it's so boring, you know. But I tell you what I have done, Max, is what I've decided to do is release some compilation albums. And I've released one already earlier this year, just after it was only a couple of, well, actually it was during Valentine's Day. I released a compilation album from all these previous singles that I released of Valentine's, you know, type love ballad songs, because that's one thing I really enjoy doing is these ballad, full orchestrated, full blown, amazing Walt Disney style Broadway spectacles. I just love to do them. I love to craft them. I love to imagine them, hear them in my head, and know that, hey, someday maybe I might do this. But I think you'll hear that evident style. You mentioned Claire. You know, you can hear that Broadway style in there. And I think that's not, you know, I don't just get up one day and go, hey, today I'm going to produce a song that's got Broadway style. It just comes out. It's part of me and always has been. But this compilation album that I mentioned, it's got all these singles on it. Well, it's the same genre. You know, I wouldn't say it's boring, but I would say that it's not as interesting as albums that I've done where they're not compilations. And the reason why I did the compilation is because I thought that people out there who prefer to have just one genre, you know, it would work for them. So I'm also I'm planning on doing a couple more compilations this year. I'm planning on doing a greatest hits compilation later this year, of which would be different genres, obviously. And then I'm planning on doing an Americana compilation, which I've done several Americana songs, which are very mysterious, lots of storyline telling, conceptual, you know, wistful. I just love them. I love Americana stories. I just love them. I did one off of my album called Celebrating the Sunshine, and the name of the song is called Buffalo Man. And it's a persona. I like to do personas where I place myself in character in these songs to give it a storyline. And it just makes it interesting for the listener. And I like to take the listener on a ride that he or she will never forget, of highs and lows, through the entire listening process. And so by the time, and that's exactly what people like Elton John, Billy Joel, Todd Rundgren, you know, all those guys, they did the same thing of that contemporary period where, you know, you go to one of their shows and they're going to give you an experience that you're never going to forget. That's exactly what I like to try to emulate in my albums. I like to think that I've done that.
Do you ever get really, like, personal with your songs? Do you ever, like, put something out there that you experienced or that you went through that maybe you don't necessarily talk about just in normal conversation?
Absolutely. I mean, there's quite a lot of songs that I've emotionally involved myself in. Well, I would say that probably every song that I put out is emotionally involved in some way, whether it be happy, happy, happy on a roller coaster ride of fun and joy and crazy, zealous intention, or something that's really, grabs you by the gut, you know, and makes you think. And it makes you think about things in your life and things that you might be able to relate to, like, you know, somebody that's near and dear to you that you've lost, or even a pet, you know, or loved ones, things like that. And not just necessarily the passing away, but to be genuinely, incredibly in love with someone, you know, and things like that. And so what I like to do is I like to touch on every type of subject. And in my songwriting, in my music, in my storytelling, I've always learned that, you speak from experience and the song will come out better. If you go and just make a song for the sake of making a song and make it up as you go along, well, those turn out really well too. But the ones that are real, that come from experience, are the ones that will really, I don't know, they just have a magical touch that relate to the listener a lot more than one that you should make up.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
seem to do anyway.
Yeah, well, I think because the first one is going to have a lot more passion to it because you've been there, you've experienced it, and the second one's, well, just something you like made up, so there's no attachment to it.
Yeah, right. And that no attachment kind of makes it a little bit more, I don't know, the magic's not on it, you know? There's no magic on it, for lack of better words. And the one that you've experienced, it's there. It's the magic's there, and you'd have to be a stone not to see it, and that kind of thing. And it's just the human relation, you know what I'm saying? And so in this emotional, these emotional, and to answer your question more thoroughly, yes, there are some songs that I cannot listen to that I have made. And it's a shame because they mean a lot to me. And I went through a lot of heartache trying to put them together, but yet I cannot go back through them and listen to them without cracking up. Mm. And I'm serious. And I will point one of the songs out. There's a song that a friend of mine, a lady that's an owner of a radio station where I had a couple of number one hits, actually. She ran, and the name of the station. A big shout out to Monica Brinkman in California. Bless her heart, she was in the fire, you know, that big fire that they had, and she's trying to get through that. And back before all that happened, she had a radio station and still does. She's just waiting to gear back up for it. It's called It Matters Radio, and an independent artist produced independent artist promoted show. And I was fortunate to be on there several times. We made good friends. And then one day she came to me out of nowhere and said, "Hey, you know what? My cat's dying. And it's got cancer. And I was just wondering, could you please write a song about it?" And so, to be honest with you, I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't really want to do it. I was reluctant at first. And I kind of went, I'm just going to tell her no. I'm sorry, but I just can't. But because not too long before that, my own cat had died of cancer. Not too long, just before she had asked me. And so it was kind of a parallel experience of writing this song where I was writing about her cat. But in fact, behind the mask, I was writing about my cat. And so I was saying her cat's name and so forth. But the name of the song is called Punky, I Love You. And I know it's silly, it kind of sounds corny, but it's not silly, it's not corny when you go investigate it. If you go investigate it, you check it out, you listen to the words, and you think about it, it just might get to you.
Yeah, because we've all been there. We've all lost a pet.
Sure. So it's a human, similarity. It's a human characteristic that everybody shares. So, yeah, I write about it. And it was very tough for me to write the song, let alone sing it, let alone record it, put it together. And then now I can't even listen to the damn thing without cracking up. So I just can't listen to it. I've tried several times. And whenever I do, my lady friend just tells me, you know, don't punish yourself. Exactly. You know, don't punish yourself. Just carry on. Go listen to Claire. You know.
There you go. Right. Yeah. All right. Just go.
So in answer to you, in kind of a painful, painstaking way, I think I've answered your question.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now you've also got a new album coming out pretty soon. I saw
that. That is true.
Number eight. Tell us about this one, man.
Well, this particular album, you know, it's kind of an extension of When You Were Being, when you were famous, the name of the album. It's kind of an extension of that, especially with one of the songs on there that was left over from the last recording period. I just ran out of time, and I decided that, hey, you know what, I'm going to save that for the next album. It's this kind of jazzy kind of bluesy piece that's very unique and unusual with its meter and change throughout the song, which is kind of typical on a lot of the songs that I do. Not typical all the time, because there's nothing typical. There's nothing typical about my music. It changes all the time, yeah. which I think is a good thing. I don't want it to be the same all the time.
Do you think you've got some more change in your future in terms of all your styles? Or do you think you're kind of like set?
No, I don't. I don't want to be set. There are a few little comfortable positions that I am comfortable with that I'm kind of set in on particular, you know, aspects of songs and this and that. But on the other hand, there are particular aspects and situations as part of songs that I'm writing that I'm experimenting with and change. I'm constantly experimenting with, and you can even go back to a previous album called Strange Afternoons, and that particular album is a very experimental album. Actually, that was the one just before this one called Strange Afternoons, I believe, and very experimental. Where I started using lots of different little details and so forth. And in my songs, I love to use all these little descriptive little details. See, to me, it's kind of like a garden. You go out in the garden. If you have a small garden like I do, it's still beautiful. It's got lots of different flowers, lots of different things to look at. You know, there's not a minute that goes by that won't challenge your, you know, in seeing it. But I'm constantly looking at different parts of it. But you can change just one tiny little part of that garden, and you would be surprised at just how big it will change the entire garden. Just that one small detail, minor detail, will have an effect on the entire garden. Well, the same thing goes for music, and when you write it, when you record it, one little detail that you add to it just totally changes its personality and flavor. Kind of like Claire at the end of it, where I kind of do the spacey kind of psychedelic ending on it, and give it that kind of Beatlesque kind of thing going on. That's just a little detail that just felt right. You know, I didn't sit my chair in my recording studio and go, okay, what can I do for the ending? No, it didn't come out that way at all. What happened was, is while I was recording the song, and it had an ending that was planned for it. And when I got to that ending, I went, wait a minute. And it came into my head, this other ending I wanted to do. And I went, scrub the old ending. I'm going to do this ending. And so that's kind of the way it came about. They just kind of come as impromptu ideas that you either are going to swing with or not. You know, and you just choose. If it feels right, you go with it. If it don't, you just don't.
There you go. Now, yeah. Have you ever been back to Memphis since you left for England all those many, many years ago?
Yeah, you know, I've been here too long, really.
Right.
You know,
it's time to go.
Oh, wow. You know, there was an Englishman that was walking down the sidewalk one day, and I was having a picnic, you know, with my lady, and she... we were talking, and you know, he could hear my accent. He could hear, you know, that I wasn't from England, but he could also hear, but he could also hear some English phrases that I was using. and he heard a few little phrases that I used, you know, and as he heard me, as he was walking his dog, he stopped and turned around. He says, "You've been here too long."
That's ominous as hell.
I know. Just, they're very eccentric here. I mean, the chitty chitty bang bang people all over the place. You know what I'm saying, man?
You've been here too long. Turns and leaves.
Here too long.
Did he elaborate on this, or was it just saying that and then piecing?
No, he was just doing it in passing. And he just kind of tipped his hat at me, you know. It kind of reminded me of like I was in a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang movie.
Yeah,
you know,
like, the hell? What does that mean? Do I have to leave now? It's like a warning.
I know, it was really funny, but it was it dawned on me that you know what, I have been here too long.
Oh,
and
do you think you might like leave?
Well, no, okay. Not that, okay. Not that. But I mean, been here too long in the sense that. I'm starting to turn into a freaking Englishman, but not in the bad sense is what I mean. I mean, it's kind of a mix of the two, and my lady keeps telling me that that's not a bad thing. You're just becoming part Yorkshireman and part Memphis boy. You know, so
which is a really interesting combination, because like
that is weird. And
think about everything, like the culture, the art, the music, the food.
Oh yeah,
it's like taking like a really like awesome steak and just dumping it with like horseradish and hot sauce and tamales and whatnot.
Exactly.
It's a really good combination.
Exactly.
You know,
it's very unusual, and as I said before, it's been one hell of a sociological experience for me and study.
I'll bet.
And at the very beginning, when I first crash landed here, I just thought, "Where the hell am I?" And you know,
what did I do with my life?
You know, where the hell am I? You know, when I would walk into a shop and I would look at all the products, I'd go, "I'm in a dream. This must be a dream." You know, and all the different little products and stuff, and I thought, what the hell is that? Yeah. You know, and so I was totally lost. You know, I was totally lost. But as time went on, all that wore off, and the novelty is not quite there anymore. And it's kind of disappointing in a way that the novelty's not there.
It's a long time.
Well, yeah, it is. And you know, that 17 years has flown by so very quickly.
I'll bet. You mentioned how your lady friend a couple times,
yes.
She being kind of the almost like the catalyst for this change. Give her a shout out, man.
Oh yes. She. Let me tell you something. She is the driving force behind every single thing I do, and that includes my music. And as a matter of fact, if it wasn't for her, I don't really think that I would have as much passion for what I'm doing right now. As it would be if I didn't have her. So she means a great deal to me, and a big shout out, the biggest shout out in the universe to the most sweetest, dear lady that any man in the world could ever meet.
Aw, that's good, man. That's really good.
I know. I can't help myself.
Man, I love it. I love it. When you can say that and you say it with such intensity, that's really a good thing, man. It's a good thing. Definitely.
You know, the love is always going to be there because it's real. And I never had that before in my whole life. All these years, and I've never had anything like that. So when that finally hits you, that has a big impact on everything. Not just, you know, your love life, but everything. Mm-hmm. And coincidentally, the music as well.
Nice. Now, does she play at all? Does she like sing or play instruments?
She sings occasionally, and I'm going to let a little... I'm going to let a little secret out.
Okay.
In Matchbox Cover, if you go and listen to Matchbox Cover, the middle eight, where you hear a person, a lady going, "Matchbox Cover," and it kind of echoes, you know?
Yeah.
That's her.
Oh, okay.
That's her. So if you want to hear, that's her.
Oh, man, that's so cool.
Sometimes we like to have something like that, you know.
Yeah, man. You know, I want to ask you just to jump back a bit to living in Memphis. What were your favorite places to either catch a show or to play at? Because I've actually been to Memphis myself. I was there last summer. I went to Beale Street, checked out some of the spots.
Cool.
For me, because I'm just a huge wrestling fan, for me, was checking out Jerry Lawler's restaurant, because I'm just...
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, that's here. I totally forgot about it.
Yeah, that so many things have changed.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And so many things have changed just in the time that I've been here in England. And you asked me, have I been back? Well, you know, earlier you'd asked me about that, and I kind of got off the road there and didn't tell you. But I've been back twice in the 17 years. And, you know, my mother and father, they passed away, and, you know, our family kind of went in different directions. So, I think I found my home here, and it's kind of worked out for me in this direction more so than it has in Memphis. But, you know, my roots are from there, and I like to go back. I would like to go back again. I would like to make a surprise visit to Beale with some old friends if they're still there, and I hope they are. And they probably are, but back in the day that I was messing around with Beale, that would have been probably back in, you know, 78, 79, 8, no, 80, 79, 80, something like that. And that would have been like, Silky Sullivan's. Silky Sullivan's was one place. And I think that, what's his name? Wasn't there the famous blues player. You know, his nightclub, I believe, was still there. Mm-hmm. But you could just walk down the street and there would be a nightclub anywhere to play in. I mean, all of them were banging and so much more alive than they are now. It just seems like the passion and the electricity is not quite as intense as it used to be. I don't know why, but that's just the way it is. Because when I went back there that time and I took my lady friend back to check it out and so forth, it just didn't seem quite as booming and big as it was when maybe it has to do with age. Because when I was younger, you know how everything seems to be bigger and brighter when you're younger. I know that one night I was playing Silky's and there were some friends and stuff that had came around. They said, hey, I would like to introduce you to Los Angeles. I think you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. And so it's up to you, come out with us and I'll introduce some people out there. So immediately when they said that to me, I went, oh, hell yeah, I'd like to try out Los Angeles. I would love to try out L.A., I've heard so much about it. All the bands are from there and so forth. So I immediately set out. And that's where I started my touring. That's where I started gigging. And that was back, I would say, probably in the middle 70s, about middle to 80, and then on out. And then when I made it out to L.A., it was like 92. And then I started going up towards Toronto, and that was around 99, and then back to Memphis again. So always on the road, always playing different places, and I found myself playing these gigs with weddings and mixed Mexican and white race weddings, and these big parties of all kinds of Mexican food that all you could eat, and they would treat the band members, they say, well, hey, give some to the piano player. He'll have some, So it was great times. It was fun times. I remember Fillmore, California, places like that. But all of it is a big blur, and I had a great time. And you know what? All of those great experiences, if I had it all to do over again, I would just do it even better, even more.
Nice, man. Nice.
Yeah.
Jared, my man, it's been awesome talking to you, dude.
And you too, Max.
I cannot wait to hear the new album. And where do folks go if they want to check your music out?
Right. Well, the main place, all these singles that we've been talking about, the 49 singles that I've got out right now, and I've got a 50th that's going to be next month. All these singles and much more, even interview clips and so forth, you can check out at reverbnation.com/Jerry Hall. And that's J-E-R, not G, but J E-R-R-Y, and Hull as in Hull in a boat, H-U-L-L. That's ReverbNation.com/Jerry Hull. Check out all my stuff there. Or just type in Jerry Hull, and you'd be surprised at how many places I pop up. It's all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, if you purchase any of my stuff from iTunes, Deezer, Spotify, stream all my stuff off there, Deezer, you know, all those places. And Google, unfortunately, I think is closed down their branch of selling. But it don't matter, because there's plenty of other places you can get my stuff. So, you know, just check me out there. And hit me up at Twitter, at Jerry Hull Singer. On Twitter, follow me. I'll follow you right back. And also check me on the Facebook. The Facebook, Jerry Hull,
the Book of Faces.
Add the Book of Faces. At Jerry Hull Singer Pianist Songwriter. Jerry Hull Pianist Singer Songwriter Facebook. And please come and like my page. And while you're at it, buy my album.
There you go, Jerry man. Awesome talking to you. Great hearing the stories, man. And cannot wait for the new album.
Thank you so much, Max. You know, it's been great talking to you, too. And I really appreciate you letting me come on your show and talk about all this stuff with you.
Always fun, dude. Always fun.
This is Angelina Singer, author of the Upper World series. And you're listening to Citywide Blackout, the best podcast for independent artists.
You pick me up, turn me down, it spins my head, turn me around, and it's driving me crazy. Oh yeah, when I say jump and you say run, you make my world turn and turn into incredible. Clear what you're doing, clear what we're being for. It's like you're 2 feet off the floor. 2 feet off the floor. Clear where you're going, clear what you're seeing, clear what you're feeling, clear what you're being. Spins my head just like we were riding the merry-go-round. Oh yeah, you prop me up, you fall me down, spinning wild, toppling and falling down to the ground. Clear what you're saying, clear what you're doing, clear what we're being for. It's like you're 2 feet off the floor. 2 feet off the floor. And clear where you're going, clear what you're seeing, clear what you're feeling, clear what you're being.
Let's face it, everyone. Until we get those mind reading chips installed, nothing's going to make a better first impression than what we can see and smell. Whether you're hanging out at someone's house or on that first date, the last thing you want to think is, what's that smell? That's why I recommend working with my pal, Kaylee Young. She's a consultant with the sites Sensi and Perfectly Posh and can help you put your best foot forward. Kaylee will work with you. No BS and no pressuring you to get that money. Your success is her success. So what are you waiting for? Contact Kaylee at 479-431-1779 or younglove4118 at gmail.com and do it now.
Lady V, host of the V Line, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
I love you.
Oh, Punky, I love you.